Welcome back, Interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm joined in this episode by Jack Estenberg.
Denied!
Nice. Okay, got it. Brian Mueller.
Squeaks. Oh. What? Squeaks. Old.
That's the kind of great dialogue we're getting.
That's actual dialogue for this movie.
That is real dialogue from this movie.
I forgot about that one.
Cody Wolf.
Places we've been.
Dead.
And we have one of our favorite special guests, Doris Scheidel, is here.
Hey.
To help us.
Nice.
We felt as four dudes for us to try to deconstruct what kind of is a romance movie? Question mark. We needed some lady help.
It's unquestionably a romance movie.
Is it?
Because I saw a movie called Winter's Tale, and there was a lot of romance in it.
Okay. See,
the tale was spelled T-A-I-L, but but there was a lot of love scenes.
Yeah. I knew you read the wrong one.
There
was one pretty epic love scene in this movie. It was so epic that there was a death at the end. Fatal love scene.
Our movie this week is the fantasy, science fiction, time travel, romance, action adventure, crime drama, period drama,
religious
themed, journalistic, history, cooking movie, Winter's Tale. Look for it in any.
They should have called it Winter's Tales.
Oh,
because there's so many of them.
I mean, the film takes place in winter, but it's not really about winter.
It's actually nothing to do with winter at all.
No, yeah.
Not really.
Except at one point, I think Colin Farrell slips on some ice. That was cool.
He does go on ice.
In the end, someone turns into snow.
They do ride the horse across the
river. Oh, he does become a snowman at the end.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie and that sounds crazy, it is crazy.
Happy birthday.
it is nuts. We are going to try to take you through this movie. And I say try. We are going to do our best because this movie is 2 hours of magical.
I was mortified when I saw it was 2 hours too.
Yeah. You thought you had a lot of flashbacks and ghosts of Mars.
No dissolves either.
I know.
No dissolves.
Yeah. It starts off in New York, 2014, where we see Colin Farrell walking around New York. Cut to New York, 1895. Colin Farrell walking. Then we meet a family who is trying to immigrate to the U.S. Mm-hmm.
Portrayed by White Collar's Matt Bomer.
Yes.
Yes.
Or is it Bomer? Is it Bomer or Bomer?
I didn't know his name until today.
He's in that movie for 0.2 seconds.
Yeah.
I didn't even know his name.
We were trying to figure out who he was.
Yeah.
Like, what? He's in this movie? Where the hell was he?
There's a lot of special guests in this special movie.
There's a lot of special guests.
And each time you're going to be like, what? Like you didn't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And one,
each one's better than the next.
One doozy of a special guest who will show up.
Yes.
The family gets rejected
because they've got a pulmonary infection.
Yeah, all the diseases in this movie, not diseases I've ever heard of.
I know. It's very old
time.
I think it's TB. I think it's tuberculosis.
Yeah, like consumption was something.
Yeah, what's consumption?
Consumption is tuberculosis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I think is what they were saying that they had in the beginning. Or some, I don't know. They had
something you hear in like an old Western, you know, like Timmy died of the consumption.
Consumption just sounds like you were really full.
Yeah.
Like you ate too much.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's because it's eating you. That's why the disease eats you.
Oh, the disease. That sounds like a Yakov Smirnoff joke. In Russia, disease eats you. So the family gets rejected, and they're going back out of New York on their boat, I guess presumably taking them back to, it sounded like they were from Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Like they were Poland.
They were Russian. Maybe?
Russian? Russian? Yeah. Like Eastern European.
Something generically Eastern European.
And he breaks. Somehow the boat they came to New York City on has a model boat in a glass case on it.
Yep.
Which he then shatters, and they put their baby in a tiny, tiny, model boat. It's not even like a boat. I mean, it's not intended.
He was really putting a lot of faith that
it's
model
like a tall
boat
ship
would actually
make
survive.
It
yeah. Best Parents of the Year award. What is, are they baby killers?
I know, this is the
baby
most
killers.
Dangerous thing I've ever seen in my life.
And they were
and can we mention, they do this
I
on the deck
of the
boat. I think
there's a storm coming in, too.
They do it on the deck of the boat in broad daylight.
Yeah.
I mean, are there other people on this boat?
And no one else in this boat is like, what are you doing?
Like, and the movie makes it seem like they're doing their baby a favor. I think you're trying to kill your baby.
This is not a good idea.
How bad is where they're from if they feel like that's a better play for their kid?
And unless they made it all romantical, like, oh, these selfless parents putting this poor little baby in this makeshift boat.
Unless they're from
boat
Marsville, capsizes. This is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Boat capsizes. Unless the colony has turned into cannibal savages.
Yeah.
Anywho. Yeah. So turned into Colin Farrell, so baby turned out awesome.
So anyway. Cut to 1916, and Colin Farrell is running away from Russell Crowe's gang on a street, and he... I still don't totally understand what's going on.
He climbs over a fence, and they're going to shoot him, and Russell Crowe is like, no, don't shoot him. I want to use the knives. And they're
this
like, okay.
Why don't they want to shoot Colin Farrell?
I think he wants to, like, savor it. He wants to savor the kill.
Why does he hate him so much? I don't even get it.
They never really get into it,
and that's kind of critical.
I think it was he worked for him, and then he, like,
They were supposed to share all the things they stole, and then he got in his head that he could just keep the things he stole and not share the profits. And that
upset him.
The crux.
But that seems to really upset Russell Crowe.
Yeah, it seems like he's really overreacting.
And Russell Crowe's decision to not shoot him really backfires on him pretty fast as Colin Farrell turns a corner and there's a white horse waiting for him. A white horse that flies.
Yep.
Over Russell Crowe and his men.
Who Colin Farrell refers to as horse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Horse.
Just a horse.
Just,
yes.
Hey, horse.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
I kept flashing back to the horse from Lone Ranger, too.
Oh. In fact,
this horse will appear on the roof of a building. Yeah. That's a very good callback right there.
Yes. You have to think that when they were making this movie, if they saw Lone Ranger and they're like, white spirit horses that show up on roofs of buildings. People are rejecting this concept. Our whole movie is based on this. What do we do now?
The structure's collapsing. What do we do? Put more Russell Crowe in. They'll like it. Okay. Yeah.
So now we cut to, and if you don't feel grounded in this movie at all at that point, you shouldn't, because you have no idea what's going on.
This is also like 5 minutes in. This all happens very, very fast. We cut from like 2014 New York to 18-something New York in literally 30 seconds.
Yes. Yes. Just so. All over
only
the
rest of the movie moved that quickly.
Yes. We cut to William Hurt's daughter is getting glasses made.
Which she never wears.
Which she never wears. We so never true. See her.
And there's this awkward... This
I just realized that. Never, she never wears glasses.
Never
wears.
This is awkward scene where the optometrist is like talking to her about her consumption. And she's
my sister died from it.
Yeah,
that's an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of how the scene ends. It's just like, okay.
And then
they explain.
Well, then she gets all deep about light and light being pretty. And
her fever allows her to see light.
She can see how everything is connected by light. And that again doesn't,
and then more light
doesn't
and stuff.
Come back.
That
anywhere.
Doesn't come back.
You get it some J.J. Abrams lens flare.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Lens flare like on HGH.
Yeah.
So Colin Farrell won't name his horse, but does start referring to the horse as his partner, which made me think, this new season of True Detective is shaping up. I'm on board. Colin Farrell and a horse? Okay. But everyone seems to know this horse. Like Russell Crowe, after the horse jumps over them, Russell Crowe's like, oh, he's got the horse.
And then he refers to it as a dog.
And he does later be like, it's not a horse, it's a dog. And that actor, I have his name in my notes. I always like him when I see him and stuff. It's like, wait, what? Wait, that's the best part of this movie. The Romeo character.
Where he's just like,
Oh, yeah, that's the guy from Lost. And
yes, he was on Fringe. He was on...
He kind of looks like...
Smoking Aces.
Yes.
He resembles the guy from... oh, my God. Blanking, you know, but he's in Romeo and Juliet. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think I might know you. Kevin Corrigan's his name, and I always shows up in a bunch of like stuff, and like
he's a big guy. He's like 6'5".
Oh, really?
Wait, or are you thinking of Kearney? Oh, you're thinking of Kearney, the God, this movie is so terrible.
Yeah, isn't it?
You're thinking of his grandson who's in the modern era time frame.
Oh, we're talking about...
Yeah.
Caesar was that
Caesar, yeah.
God, this movie's awful.
Yeah.
I'm Caesar. My grandfather was Romeo.
Yeah.
Remember that time I told you about I didn't even realize that.
Okay. Yes. Those Shakespearean names.
Yeah. So everyone seems to...
makes so much sense now.
Everyone knows the horse. Colin Farrell takes it to a stable at Grand Central Station, which I'm a little skeptical that Grand Central Station was a train station and a stable in 1915, but maybe I'm wrong. And a guy who we keep seeing come into the movie later on agrees to stable this horse, and he also seems to know who this horse is.
Right.
Everyone's very comfortable with this horse.
Everyone knows it's a very special horse dog.
Right, a horse dog. Right,
horse dog.
Right. Well,
maybe that's the horse's name is Dog.
His partner doesn't know his own name.
No, it doesn't.
Well, because we cut to Russell Crowe is offering his cronies like $500.
His cronies.
Or his cronies, his lackeys. Oh. Yeah. Oh, his cronies. That's cronies. What you should call them.
Oh, I get it.
He's offering them $500, and like one of them is like, "Oh, 500 seems like a lot for a horse." And Russell Crowe's like,
"It's not a horse; it's a dog."
It's a dog, and he's like, "Okay, boss."
Sure thing.
Whatever.
But then doesn't he take like a gemstone and like hold it up to the window, and it creates like this light model of Grand Central Station? That's where he is.
He talks like an old sea captain at times.
If we talked about this,
you get the dirty dog.
What accent did you think Russell Crowe was doing, Dora?
I don't know. I mean, Russell Crowe's always doing some weird accent.
It was weird.
I didn't know.
Because who was it, Jack? You thought it was doing Irish.
Doing Irish because Colin Farrell is chosen to go. Now, I'm not going to knock the acting too much of this movie because, believe it or not, this film is a really good cast. And the acting is actually pretty good through most of it. Nonetheless, it was confusing to me. And again, I respect Colin Farrell because he's a good
actor.
Stop
putting qualifiers in. Just,
yeah.
Just get to the point.
Dissolve to the next one.
We're going to dissolve now. He chose to use his own accent, his natural Irish accent, right?
Which I was trying to figure out throughout the movie why he had
kind of no
Irish
sense
accent.
Because he's the baby in the boat and he was raised in New York. Now, it's possible he grew up in an Irish neighborhood.
By an Asian man.
But usually an accent kind of breeds out after like a generation, right? So it's possible he has it. So I got the sense that maybe Russell Crowe was trying to sound like Colin
Blackbeard.
Farrell just so they could be a two-way street here. One, are they saying that maybe
I thought that's what they were doing, but then later on in the movie he's telling the girl how he used to sing and dance in the streets and all this stuff to make money, and then Russell Crowe came along and hired him. So he was already like a teenager by that point.
So he picked up a heavy Irish accent in the U.S.
is what they're telling us.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's weird because Colin Farrell does American accents all the time in movies. It's not like he can't do it.
Yeah. And Russell Crowe, to me, seemed to be doing an accent that hasn't been discovered yet.
In fact, we're in New York and not one person had an American accent.
No one did.
Except for Romeo. But
And maybe
and
William Hurt a
he
little
did.
Bit.
Yeah.
But
maybe. But And why did he? Because his daughter was all
British.
Yeah, his daughter
yes.
was British.
Yeah,
I was confused by that, too.
Her father wasn't, right?
Yeah. No.
No.
His father was William. Her father
was
William Hurt.
I was so fixated on
this. They need to make some serious choices about accents, and they made zero choices.
I was so focused on Colin Farrell's accent that I didn't even...
This is very Pompeii-esque.
Nobody do an accent. Except for you, Russell. Okay, let's shoot. Go.
Well, what
accent do I do? I don't care. Just I want an accent out of you, but nobody else. And Colin Farrell's like, I can do a Brooklyn accent. Shut up, you're Irish. Okay.
Well, do you remember we were reviewing Pompeii and we figured out that they just said to everyone, talk how you would talk if you were here. And I think that's what this movie did. Just be like,
people spoke a dead language then anyway, so.
Do whatever you want. Yeah. Okay, so... And then there's also this weird reference in this scene where Russell Crowe just seems to offhandedly mention, like, miracles are down by half.
I love that miracle quote.
Going into this movie, I knew nothing about this. I hadn't read the book, which is apparently this well-regarded book, but there are so many times around where I'm like, what? What do you mean? What does that mean?
I thought this was just a simple love story.
Also,
when that horse... The horse jumps over the fence in the beginning of the movie. The fence is way too high for the horse to jump. So now I'm thinking, is this a supernatural film? Well, or was it one of those things where the film is extra asking you to suspend your disbelief. Oh, it's one lucky horse, and you're just supposed to go that it could jump that high. So when he mentions the miracles being down, I was like, that was again. I was wait a minute, is there magic going on?
It was a bizarre like mix of like, I can understand like magical, like New York City magical 1916 love story, whatever. It's like, okay, a little magical, but to then have Lucifer and demons and angels, it's like, okay, well, that's just, it's supernatural and magical and like I don't understand it.
Jack and I were talking about
this. I'm so confused because they didn't like even like introduce that. It's just kind of like you're just left to know that that Russell Crowe's a demon.
There are no rules. Yeah. And like, because Jack and I were talking about that, they're clearly going for magical realism, where, but like some characters are magical, some characters are not.
Right.
And some characters seem to be aware of magical things. Some characters are not aware of magic. Like, and they never give you a lot of ground on either one to kind of say like, well, here's the framework that we're working in, or here's the rules of this world, or here's the. It's just like, yeah, we're gonna throw a lot of stuff at you. Yeah. And if, you know,
buckle up.
Yeah, buckle up. Who knows what's coming next? You know.
Yeah. Who knows? I didn't.
So we learn Colin Farrell is a thief. This is kind of where we figure that out. And the horse
is telling Colin Farrell it's time to steal now.
Yes, and it wants him to. It wants him to break into the home, William Hurt's home, where William Hurt's daughter, who has consumption, is there. The horse is guiding him to that home. And I'm going to have a lot of questions about that later on, because that seems to not be related to what the spirit horse is doing. But so the
I think the spirit horse, he wants... He needs them to meet, I think, is the...
We get that exposition from the...
I just realized why. Because I was thinking last night, like, there was some very heavy coincidences.
I'm going to need you to explain to me why.
I think I know why.
Okay.
I think it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. But I think I know why
the
horse would want him to meet.
So he breaks in, and we have a romantic... Then we shift into a romantic comedy mode, where this becomes a meet-cute between thief... Colin Farrell and dying Beverly, who's playing a piano.
Colin Farrell.
Furiously, right? Furiously plays that piano.
Like in the piano. It is aggressive piano playing.
Aggressive piano playing. Like, maybe you should...
It's like, Brahms.
Like, save your energy. You're dying.
It's like when Jack edits on a keyboard. It's like...
Yeah, Jack does pound the keyboard.
That's the genius of my work. Don't knock the process.
And there's like a kind of like a lot of like cutesy like, hey, you know, like I was gonna break in, but your floor is squeaky. And a lot of
The floor, it squeaks. Like literally there's like this, he was gonna break into this girl's house. This girl is dying. This is this weird dramatic movie, and now all of a sudden there's this deflate comical scene.
It's very comical, which ends up with her saying to him like,
I've never been kissed, which was awkward and not came out of nowhere.
That was
to a stranger who was going to rob her and had a gun in his hand.
But she was like, "I'm 21 and I've never been kissed."
Like, oh, I shouldn't have said that.
I've said too much.
Do you think she says that to everyone?
What a hoe!
Yeah. Just throws herself at men.
Like, was that cut out of when she was getting the glasses made earlier? She said that to that guy too.
It
kind of
looked like she liked him. I was thinking at first with that with the glasses guy. I was like, does she want him? I don't know.
After that didn't go well, she's like, you know what? I'm going to turn this up a little.
She's dying.
The next guy I see.
She's dying. Her primary motivation is to get laid before she goes.
You know, they don't call it consumption for nothing.
Whoa.
And then she says to Colin Farrell.
Mr. Carnew, Consumption Williams.
Consumption. I'm sorry. That's an amazing callback to our last episode.
Consumption Williams. Man, I hate that nickname. You do it one time and it sticks with you for the rest of your life.
It's even worse. Oh, who's giving out these nicknames?
It was one time.
There was a door in our last movie. There's a character named James Desolation Williams. His nickname was Desolation.
James Consumption Williams. I needed some money, you know? It wasn't a big deal.
So
self-defense.
So Beverly says Colin Farrell, she goes, "What's the best thing you've ever stolen?" And I'm like, "Oh God, don't say it, Colin Farrell. Don't say it." Then he's like, "I'm beginning to think I haven't stolen it yet." And I'm like, even she's like,
that was a good accent, by the way.
And even she's like,
when Alex says accents.
Yeah, I know.
There was a comical take on how it actually sounds. I'm beginning to believe I haven't smelled it.
I can't do any serious accents. They're all parodies.
I'm beginning to believe I haven't stolen it yet.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
That was good.
Or
and
Russell Crowe.
She's like,
I'm beginning to believe I haven't stolen it yet.
Poor Russell Crowe.
Your heart, literally.
Let's steal your heart.
And I love how she just groans.
Yeah, she's like, oh, you're a jerk. Yeah. Then she's like, can I make you tea?
Yeah.
That'll work.
But from Colin Farrell's perspective, she just, like, led him on saying, I've never been kissed. So what was he supposed to do?
Totally. Yeah. She started this.
This is on you.
That little tease.
So then he's like, look.
Consumptive tease.
I've got some problems with Russell Crowe. I do have this horse. I got to get out of town for a little bit.
I got this horse.
Can we, like, hang out in a couple months?
And she's like,
she literally just told him that she's, like, about to die. And he's like, hey, I'm going to be away for a couple months. When I get back, you want to, like, get some lunch or something? She's like, listen,
I'm going to be dead by the
way. She says, well, by the time you get back, I'll be dead.
It's like, he's like, oh, I forgot.
He's like, ah, buzzkill. All right.
Awkward.
Oh, so weird.
I wasn't listening when you were just telling me that. Yeah. Thing,
so. Also, if it's not contagious, why don't we just slip over here behind the rafters?
Why does he say, he says, I'm going to go south for a little bit till this blows over. Russell Crowe just tried to, like, kill him with an army of, like, 50 men.
Yeah.
It's not going to blow over in a few months.
No. Yeah, that's not calming down.
No, it's not.
And so he just leaves. He's like, well, what are you going to do? Sorry to hear you're dying.
What are you going to do?
I think my horse is double parked. I got to go. So he goes outside.
Did double parking exist in 1915, by the way?
There's probably problems with horses pooping in the wrong place and stuff. You know,
there probably were laws against illegal horse parking back then.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
If you get the right grade of hay for your horse, you know.
Ken Burns made a movie about it.
He would make a movie about it.
What was it called? Horse?
Horse.
It was called
H-A-R-S-E.
This movie should be called Horse.
It was called Horse, a Ken Burns film.
And again, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know anything about the story as I'm watching it. And we then get a scene with Russell. We're going to cut to Russell Crowe is in a restaurant. He walks in, and this is very like Gangs of New York. Everyone's like terrified of him, where he proceeds to eat a gazillion oysters.
No, like, can we talk about how they enter the restaurant? The one guy goes, table, that one.
Yeah,
and everyone gets people up. Just get up. From the meal.
Yeah, everyone just leaves, and they're totally like, yeah, we gotta go. Yeah,
they're like, and it looked like in one of the shots, they're like, was an open table. They were just being like assholes and not taking the open one and making the people who are already sitting leave just to assert their power.
Yeah.
Dick move.
Yeah,
table
very
that
not
one.
Cool.
I wonder if that technique would work.
And
I'm gonna try it at Applebee's tonight. Table that one. There's an open one in it right here. There's bar seating if you prefer. But that one's taken right now.
But
the whole place is literally there's nobody. It's a dead night. That's the only table that has people at it.
If you are at Applebee's, I do recommend you ask the waiter if they can pan fry an owl and serve it for you. Which happens
they
in
better have
not
that
only
owl.
Not
better
only
have that owl,
only owl was it a like a South African owl?
It's something crazy.
It was like from a specific region of the world.
Yeah,
and the waiter's like, I don't know what to tell you. We don't stock owls. And Russell Crowe kills him for not.
By the way, how does he kill him?
Yeah. I think it happened so quickly. I think he must like slit his throat or something with his demon hand.
I thought he put his hand on the guy's face and
maybe
like
his face off.
Like. Faced him to death, or I don't like I didn't
well, see again. I wasn't sure if this is supernatural or not, so I was like, is he like using like demon power?
Well, that was the first,
or was
part
it like
where
does
you
he have a straight razor? Does he have a straight
human.
Razor on him?
It's yeah, because like, his face changes to like,
yeah,
because
his face,
face,
yeah,
and then he, like,
oh, that's right.
Right.
I think he just like
he's
hacks
got
the guy.
He's got cracks in his face,
and we see him, his face kind of explode. There's like Russell Crowe face, and there's like demon face Russell Crowe, where his demon face busts out through the cracks in his face, which. At this point, I'm starting to go, okay, I am not on solid ground with this movie.
Is this when he starts finger painting with blood?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. I love this part.
it made me laugh, too, because he paints the, he grabs the blood and he like paints like a quick painting of like a redhead.
Okay.
You were being very generous.
Redhead because it's blood.
The redhead. Did anyone else just see?
Oh yeah, it was just a smear of blood, which made me laugh because when he goes find that redhead and Romeo goes what redhead? He's like that redhead. Like, he points to the painting. He's like,
that's just what is that?
Like, that's a red blood. Yeah, by far, like, the only smart character too. In the whole movie. Yeah.
I feel like Romeo is the audience in this movie.
Yeah, talking about.
So they're like, I don't, where am I?
I totally related to Romeo.
And it's like Dora said, it's just like a smear. It would just be like if I dipped my hand in a paint bucket and like smeared it and I was like, find this red
hand. No, this was like fingerprinting.
Show him a Jackson Pollock. I want to find this man.
By a preschooler. That's what it looked like.
And it's crazy, but what happens in the next scene?
They find her.
A cab driver IDs her and he pulls out this crazy drawing.
That's her.
It's just
excuse me, ma'am, can you tilt your head a little bit but stay facing the other direction?
Put your hand up.
All right, now spatter some blood. Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
uses that thing as you might as well have had like you said, like taking a can of paint, thrown it on a wall, and use that as your ID.
There's no information in the piece of paper
police have found this photo, this drawing of the suspect. It's like a bunch.
It's just and the
basically
color red.
Anyone with red hair would have been a candidate.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Male or female.
Yeah.
There was really no
or maybe not
discussion.
Even people. Like, if you saw, like, a balloon, you'd be, that could be what he's
exactly.
looking for.
Exactly, a stop sign?
Yeah.
That looks like it.
Exactly.
A red light?
Yeah, fire hydrants across the city were probably being ID'd as this. Yeah.
It was just bizarre.
And why did Russell Crowe even need to, like, paint that? Well, apparently
I think it was just a vision. I think
ID'd,
it was like this vision that just came to him, and he's like, "I have to
he
paint.
Has terrible
I have
vision.
To paint."
Yeah,
you.
His visions are.
He
like
had to
very...
paint it. He had to paint it as he later just explains with the blood of a virgin. So that poor guy didn't get any before he died.
Thank God he wasn't in an Indiana Jones movie where he had to like write out a map and it's just a bunch of like massive blotches.
Yeah.
All right, first we need to go here, then here, then there. Where? What are we talking about here? What country are we in?
Yeah.
Find it.
Yeah.
Arr.
Don't be wasting time asking these questions. Give me some oysters.
He's been stealing me Lucky Charms.
And I do want to say there was one scene and one scene.
Keep it to Jason Statham.
Keep it in your wheelhouse, yeah. There's one scene and one scene only in this movie that I enjoyed, and it was the scene with Graham Greene as Colin Farrell's friend?
Yeah.
I don't know what his relationship
with
Colin Farrell was.
The one who was telling him about the horse?
The spirit
horse.
Yes.
That was his dad, kind of, right?
Well, that's why. That confused me, too.
Because
he
said.
And that's why I thought when they would show that character, it would be an Irish guy. But it was like
A Native American guy. Graham Greene could have been anything from his father to his coworker. I don't know.
Well, because then I think there was that line where he's like, "I can't believe it's been 21 years or whatever since I took you off pulled you off that boat."
Yeah, he was the one who found him.
He's the one that found him. Yeah,
he's the one who basically raised him. And that's why I'm like, why does he have an Irish accent? I'm hoping they're going to explain this at some point.
That makes even less sense than I thought it did. And I love Graham Greene. I'll watch Graham Greene and everything. I thought he was fun in this just purely expositional scene.
It's one of the only really good scenes in the movie.
Well, it's the only scene, and it's funny because
they explain something to you, at least.
They explain the concept of a spirit horse, which is the one thing in the movie that's like, okay, I get the spirit horse thing. That's the only thing.
From the Lone Ranger, of course.
The Lone Ranger's horse.
Yes.
Now it's
this
yours.
Is Silver. and then at some point, I think Graham Greene even says to Colin Farrell, "What are you talking about? Angels and demons?" And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Word.
Which goes unanswered. But Graham Greene's basically like, hey, go get that girl. Take your spirit horse and get that girl.
Because they never portrayed Colin Farrell as like a religious person or someone who like has kind of been introduced to this world, unless you're supposed to assume that working for Russell Crowe, he saw his demon side sometimes. I don't know, but it was bizarre how they just threw you into this world when.
Well, let me ask each of you a question. Who here thinks that Colin Farrell knew Russell Crowe was a demon, or Colin Farrell's character in the world of this movie knew Russell Crowe was a demon? I vote no.
I think he had to, because when they go up stream or whatever to the house, he said something like, "Oh, he can't come up here," or something like.
Did he say? Okay.
I thought he did.
He
like,
said that at the end.
I have a feeling
he
can't come up here or something like that.
Okay,
like he knew he knew he couldn't come outside the city. I don't know.
Okay,
why can't the demon go outside?
There's some ancient treaty.
He
feel like
to,
that was covered in a much more interesting movie.
Probably in the book.
Yeah.
It was probably covered.
Maybe.
That wasn't clear to me. I was just like, all right, I guess they're going to hang out for a while.
I don't know if he knew or I don't know.
I don't.
I don't. This is for a story that's very simplistic. There were like key points where I'm like, I don't know what that character. I don't know what that basis is on this. That's where the magical realism kind of falls apart, because Colin Farrell seems to be in a realism world, and other characters seem to be in a magical world.
Even the girl who he falls in love with, the Beverly character, is almost kind of magical because she can sense the light. I mean, she's not aware of the demons and wizards or whatever, but she's aware of the magical light.
Yes,
it's very it's very unclear who knows what.
And her little sister, because her sister's like, we need to build a bed where people can get
the
healed.
The sister seems to be magical.
Although
but then,
at the end, she's like straight up an editor in chief of a newspaper. So
at 160
at the
ripe
old age of 160.
So her magic world didn't really play out so well.
No.
She's in a dying industry now.
I should be retired, but I can't retire.
She's at the end of the career, though, so she was able to get. You know,
she should be retired.
I mean, if I was magical, I'd be doing a lot cooler shit than being the editor in chief
of a newspaper. Yeah,
just saying.
All right, so
that's Magic Dora, though. You know,
Magic Dora,
Magic Dora,
magical
crazy
realism
stuff.
Dora. So Colin Farrell shows up. Russell Crowe is now coming after, or shows up.
He's about to kill the redhead.
This is a big theme with Russell Crowe when he has opportunities to kill people,
he's like a Bond villain.
Have we talked about yet the time where he tries to kill Colin Farrell with his head?
Oh, that's later on. That's coming up.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That's coming up.
That's about halfway through.
It's my favorite part.
I did enjoy that, too.
It's my favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah. That left me with a lot of
questions. Deadly head.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
And because also, this is a magical realism world, but Russell Crowe's character uses things like guns. Like, he doesn't use magical powers to kill people. He's just like, hey, give me that knife.
Yeah, what's the point of him being a demon?
He's got a horse.
Yeah, he's not really using his demon
qualities. If I was a demon,
I would have some cool shit at my disposal. Yeah. I would be demoning up all the time.
I know, and he's like, hey, is my gun full of bullets? Like,
does my head feel really hard today?
Yeah.
Feels pretty solid.
He does wear nice suits.
So just before he can kill, which he could have killed her right away, but he had to tell her that he was going to kill her and
like
how he's going
to
kill her.
30 minutes to kill her. Yeah, this
so,
is just classic
the
Bond
just villain monologue.
Just before he can, Colin Farrell comes riding up on his horse and
again, he's on a horse. Russell Crowe could have been like, hey, look at that horse. It's not coming that fast. He could
they
have
do
just
one,
killed
yeah.
her.
They do one of my favorite things in movies, too, when someone's on a horse and like they ride up and like grab someone, like scoop them up. Like,
that move would have been
physically she would have been trampled. She would have been trampled.
Or just the strength it would take to pull a person with one arm. And he would have had to have lifted her over, like, his head to get her on that horse.
Not to mention she has consumption, so she couldn't survive this.
There's
we can't get too excited.
Can you imagine lifting another person with one arm and, like, raising your arm over your head?
I gotta say, though,
for her also being sick, like, what evidence was there that she was sick saying that she was sick?
It's Hollywood
sick,
though.
She didn't
look sick.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't act sick.
She's
looked freaking normal the whole
time. She made snow melt.
She would walk around half naked in the snow, and the snow would melt.
She is Hollywood sick. That doesn't scream consumption.
Yeah. When she walks into the glasses, you know, the optometrist, and he's just like right away like, what do you have? I'm like, what do you mean, what do you...
She looks great. She looks really hot.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, she's not even
she's
coughing.
All flushed in the cheeks.
Yeah, she looks
who diagnosed her with tuberculosis?
She's all backlit.
Yeah.
She's had, you know,
I don't know. Anyways, sorry. Side note, but...
That is true. Yeah, that is very troubling.
Yeah,
so this is where they escape from the demon
from
gangsters.
And Cody, tell me, how do they escape from the demon gangsters?
Well, Alex.
Because here's the note I have at that point, like in the movie, which is in all capitals.
Yes, the horse has wings.
Horse has wings.
Yeah. And it jumps off a cliff.
The horse has wings.
Onto the frozen.
It's a dog, it's not a horse.
No one is surprised by this. No one reacts.
However, Romeo makes a good statement at this part. Because Colin Farrell jumps, the horse has wings. What the hell is going on? Now they're running down the East River or whatever. It's frozen, and they're all standing there. And Russell Crowe is like, his horse rears up, and all their Model T cars screech to a halt. And he gets out, and he's like, damn! And he's like, you know, he got away. And then Romeo says, he's right there. Why don't we go get him?
I do like that.
Oh, Romeo.
To which Romeo is
killed for this insolence.
Yes.
Well, he's killed because he says, well, we almost had him.
Where if I'm Romeo, I'd be like, dude, you've had so many opportunities to kill this guy.
I'm not the one that had the girl like a foot from me.
From like a
I was lecturing her
with a knife to her torso.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
That. So they go up river to the Coheris, which is a house.
House? Like this is
it's a town.
I think it was supposed to be a town.
It's a house
it's
with custom
house.
Matchbooks.
You just see the one
too.
House. Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone's there at this point. Like.
Well, yeah, because
like
the family
holiday.
Leaves earlier, and they're going up a day earlier to
Christmas
prepare
holiday.
A room for the girl. Whatever.
So
I can't remember
leave,
the girl's name.
They leave
Beverly.
The girl who, according to this movie, whose death
deadly
is
ill.
Imminent,
yeah.
alone in New York
so,
City,
so
and then
they
just
can,
have her travel.
They
up
can
on
make
their
the
own.
Room or set up the room for her because she has to be cold, so she has to be outside. So then they're already at the house when they get there.
Yeah.
So they ride up and he gets to meet her family.
And no one's like, who's this guy?
And this is yeah. really awkward, too.
And no
like
one's
he has
like
the what are your intentions to my daughter speech.
Yeah.
And,
which they were also supposedly, she was going to have to take a car to this, like, wait, to this upstate house.
Right.
They just walk in on a horse on the river and no one is like, how did you get here on a horse?
Right. Like, no one really questions
like,
it.
Like, oh, yeah. we've been expecting you. We thought yeah. you'd come through on the road, but that works too.
Right.
We thought you'd come alone, but you got a new
yeah.
a new dude on your arm, so
yeah.
that works too as well.
Got this sweet ride coming in.
And then this whole part too, like the love story seemed rushed because he's like immediately telling the father, like, I'm so completely in love with your daughter. Like they've met literally yesterday.
Yeah.
They've
yeah.
seen each other once.
In fact, after he tells William Hurt, like, you know, I'm so in love with your daughter, you know, I'll do anything for her.
Yeah.
We then cut to him, Colin Farrell, having a conversation with daughter where he's like, yeah, here's, I do work as a thief, and here's where I grew up. I'm like, pretty basic stuff that they had never talked about,
right.
but he's all in yeah. on this.
Like, they had literally, I maybe it was in the book, it was more fleshed out, but literally they met, they had tea after he tried to rob her,
yeah.
and then he swung by on a horse and picked her up, lifted her over his head, and
yeah.
he's totally in love with her, and it was like, I just wasn't buying it.
And then remember,
no.
he's like, do you ever feel like when you love someone so much that they just can't die?
Yeah.
And Dad's like,
no.
Nope.
My wife died,
factual.
So
yeah.
so no.
Yeah.
Screw
yourself.
Yeah. Sorry, my wife wasn't
you didn't
in
your
magical reality world. She was
she was in the real world.
Yeah.
What
we,
was...
we didn't have a flying horse for her, sorry.
What was the point of that conversation, too, where they, I think, tried to make a joke where... the dad was pronouncing
claret,
like filet,
yeah.
fillet.
Fillet?
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Because like, I'm an American. It's fillet.
I'm
Irish.
I thought it was just to show that.
But my daughter's British.
My daughter's British. That's true.
I feel like that
there
either.
There's just some odd tonal changes.
It either
yeah.
had to have been like a line from the book that's famous, or William Hurt was in a weird mood on the day. Because it didn't.
It just seemed completely out of place.
It did.
For his character.
Well, and for a character who we're not invested in. Like, the William
I
Hurt
just,
character
yeah,
is
yeah.
such a small part of this movie. And, like.
I was thinking maybe it was just to show that why he would be accepting of this guy who's just like a thief and like a poor guy when he's like
so
this rich guy and but he's a normal guy because he says claret and fillet
so he must have worked his way up for nothing
of, yeah so that's why you're like oh yeah you can
but I think
fall in love
I thought
daughter.
Brian was right that it was played as a joke
oh it was definitely a joke
but
I think
it was
that's
like a
why.
Joke they forgot the punchline on like
yeah.
it was
they
like all set up and they were like yeah we need well and I loved William Hurt's scenes because he's not a big part of this movie but his scenes are all very intense there's a scene coming up where you'd be
yeah.
like this why this scene makes no
uh-huh.
Like,
yeah, but then you don't see him again after some critical moments. But that's,
yeah,
you
so
know,
we
poor Bill Hurt.
Yeah,
and so the what's the little girl's name? The little girl who
Willa?
Ends up being
Willa.
Okay, Willa.
Little Willa.
Okay,
little Willa.
Little
Willa, who is Beverly's
sister.
Younger sister. She's totally tuned in to magical reality, and you're right. That's where she tells Colin Farrell, "Hey, you need to make a princess bed."
No, he didn't name him. He had, like, the neighbors make it. The kids,
oh, that's
she
right.
had the neighbor kids make it or something.
The neighbor kids
yeah.
made it.
Yeah.
I made this bed.
Yeah.
I made this bed, and
now
if
sleep
you...
in it.
And if you kiss...
If you kiss her when
on
she's,
it...
And when she's dead, if she's dead, lay her on the bed and kiss her, and she won't be dead anymore or something
and
like that.
And she won't die.
Now bang her on it.
Give it to her.
And he's like, boy, you're a really weird little kid. I
don't, yeah, very... you're going to have sex with my sister. If you do, do it on this princess bed.
I was also...
No.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really weird scene.
Her head starts spinning around.
Whatever, whatever we do, we can't allow him to have sex with Beverly on the princess bed. Stop it at all costs.
It's not a bed, it's a couch.
Russell Crowe starts drawing lewd images of them having sex in the princess bed and bug.
But it's okay, it's still...
Make sure this doesn't happen. What is that?
It's a blob. It's like his handprint with a smiley face drawn
He's like, you know exactly what that is, don't you?
I thought at some point you would just make like a Thanksgiving turkey and put your hand on the paper and outline it. Like,
that
would have
been
find
clear.
That bed.
That would have been a clearer image than what
this
we saw.
This is what the owl looks like. I want you to pantsuit.
So then there's a quick scene where Colin Farrell saves the house that's about to explode.
We get into the devil next.
We do.
Oh, we can't skip that.
Get the scene that I'm sure anyone who watches this movie's brain melted.
I literally laughed. I stopped the movie. I had to leave the room for a minute, just like collect myself. Because I'm like, that is the most bizarre cameo ever.
Where, I don't know. There's no way to dance around. Will Smith plays the devil. And
it sounds like he's doing the Cypher Rage voice too from.
When Russell Crowe goes into the devil's den and it's all like dark at first, he has like full on devil voice. He's talking like, who goes there?
Yeah.
Like, that's how he's talking. I'm like, oh my God, like, is this person going to talk like, and then when the lights come on and reveal it's Will Smith, I'm like, oh my gosh, like Will Smith is in this movie. And two, my next thought was like, is he going to like keep talking in this weird voice?
Right. He doesn't though. He's just starts talking like Will Smith.
He becomes Will Smith after the lights come on.
He's dressed very modern. He's wearing like a Jimi Hendrix t-shirt. He's got an electric light bulb. He's reading the brief history of time and
space. Jimi Hendrix t-shirt in 1916.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's wearing a Jimi Hendrix t-shirt. He's wearing. He's reading a brief history of time by Stephen Hawking.
I read this one review where they were like, maybe they just didn't want to tell Will Smith to change. He came in wearing that, and they were just like, eh.
I didn't even notice.
I could be wrong about this.
He's dressed modern.
Maybe it was Jimi Hendrix. I didn't notice it in the first one. I didn't go back, but I noticed it in the second one.
Jimi Hendrix.
The second one. Was he wearing a shirt with his son on it?
Oh, I did not look at it that closely.
Trey Smith?
Yeah, whatever his son's
name.
Jaden Smith. I thought he was wearing a shirt with his son's image on it.
That's straight up the costume designer being like, "Will, you do what you want.
Yeah, that,
you just do you.
Like,
you
I
do
would
you.
Believe it. Like, I would.
I gotta see.
I would
find
not
a
not
that.
Believe that.
Yeah.
I thought it was Jimi Hendrix.
You do you.
I don't remember what he was wearing the first time.
Jimi
I just
Hendrix
noticed
would
it the
kind
second.
Of look like Will Smith's son.
Yeah.
And the thing we learn is that in this world, the devil's business is very bureaucratic. Like, there's a lot of red tape where he, like, the devil has to go over to this special part of his office and like Russell Crowe has to stand behind the white line
and he has to make a pitch. I request permission to leave the five boroughs. That's his demonic
I want to go upstate. first ever guy wanted to go upstate, I'm guessing,
to which Will Smith tells him,
permission denied. It was very after
denied
early. Denied. Take a knee, Russell Crowe.
That was right about that.
Take a knee.
And then it just sort of ends there, right? And he's just like,
he says, "No, I'm sorry."
Well, that's when he goes to the angel.
Okay. Then Russell Crowe.
Can we also just real briefly before we move on, the fact that Will Smith was in this movie in two scenes, and we watched this movie 9 months after it came out speaks to how dead Will Smith's career is, that we did not know Will Smith was in this movie.
It does.
What do you think? Like, a few years ago, he was like the most bankable box office star, and if like Will Smith was had one line in a movie, it made headlines.
I mean, you think about like Tropic Thunder, even like when Tom Cruise was cameoing that, like everyone knew about it.
Tom Cruise wasn't all that big then.
Right. Yeah, this is, or like maybe even an interesting example would be like, this is going way back, but the Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie, you couldn't not hear about how Sean Connery was cameoing at the end. Everyone knew about it.
You
know, yeah, this was like a total vacuum.
I was amazed.
Nobody really cared.
Yeah. So Russell Crowe goes to an angel who owes him a favor. Why would an angel be owing a demon? I don't know.
You have to watch Supernatural, then you'll understand.
Oh, or I Frankenstein.
I was wondering where the gargoyles weren't represented. Were they in this movie?
That's true. We do get a huge jump in time, which is very I Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's true.
and the what happens? Russell Crowe gives the angel like a bottle
it's
of
a something. Vial of a vial. Poison, basically.
Yeah, he says it basically it'll kill someone if their heart is their heart is elevated.
Okay,
and it would kill them.
And then we have to talk about what I think is the funniest non sequitur scene, which is we go cut back to upstate New York. And there is some kind of problem with the boiler at William Hurt's house.
Yeah.
And they're, like, freaking just, out trying to get everyone out of
blow.
The house.
Like, the house is literally, like, shaking. Like, Godzilla's coming.
Yeah.
And this thing is about to blow.
And we suddenly turn this into, like, the end of, like, Star Trek II, where, like, you know, they're down in the basement. And they think the boiler's about to blow up. They send the mechanic out because it's so dangerous. By the way, a guy whose job it is to work on boilers. He's like, get out of
and
here.
And William Hurt refuses to leave
because
he wants to go down with the house.
And even Colin Farrell's like, that's kind of crazy, dude. Like, it's a house. Like, you don't have to go down with it. And William Hurt's like, hey, that's the choices I'm making. Don't question me.
Yep.
So then we see Colin Farrell's like mutant power is to fix things.
He's good with machines. I don't understand,
machines.
Like, all he did was turn a valve. He just, like, opened a valve. Like, I don't understand what the mechanic or whatever was doing. The handyman,
know.
What he
yeah,
was
what
trying
was
to do.
Doing?
Yeah, what was the handyman? Just, like, a guy who works on boilers, and Colin Farrell's just, like, reaching his hand in and turning knobs.
No, you have to open this valve.
Yeah. Okay. And then the best laugh I got in the whole movie is when Colin Farrell fixes the boiler, and William Hurt gives him this, like, super huge hug. And
you
I'm
laughed
like,
at that?
I think I'm like, who is this William Hurt character? We don't even care about this guy. We're not invested in this relationship at all. But like, they're playing. This has been the most dramatic moment, arguably, in the movie so far, is that William Hurt's house didn't blow up.
Yeah, that was weird.
So
this calls for a fillet.
dissolve to
clarets all around.
Dissolve to Beverly wants to go dancing, even though it's dangerous for her.
Yes.
So her and Colin Farrell go to dance hall or whatever.
It's like an old timey dance, like very.
Well, I think it was.
It's not one of those
maybe
dance
more in that time.
But
period,
of that
right?
time, yeah.
It's like, one of those dance scenes again, where it's like everyone knows the dance. Like,
right.
Is it, was this really the reality in the 1900s where everyone knew choreographed dances? Because it always happens.
Beverly said she knew all the dances from books.
From
so
books.
Maybe they all read books.
Books. Colin Farrell even says like, maybe they all read I did books. A little bit of dancing. In my youth, and Colin Farrell seems to know like these high society dances as well.
Yeah.
And he knows how to pronounce claret.
Yeah, he does.
It's claret.
Yeah.
So, so they get up to dance, and you see the angel drop the poison in her glass.
Right. Yeah.
And then they show, I love at the end of the scene, they show like just a quick, like, 15 frame shot of her, like, just drinking out of the glass.
So
you
it's
know
so
she drank.
You know you drank. Just in case like, someone was like, I wonder if she drank that. Yeah.
And then they cut to later on that night, she's undressing in her room.
She gives him the booty
time. He's watching her.
He's watching her from afar,
creepily.
And she's like,
"Yeah." Like,
by the way,
meanwhile, everybody else can see up at this tent the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Like, by the way, I've always felt in movies like those scenes are always the ones that have the most separation from reality. Where if that if you did that in real life, it would be a dramatically different into the night. Like if you ever just like. We're downtown and just like looked up in a lady's window and saw her undressing. Like you would have a cop car pull up a minute
or
later.
Or at the very least, a look of fright, not a look of like come hither.
Right.
Which is exactly what she did.
Yeah.
I would have been like.
She wanted it though. She even said like, if you don't do this now, no one's gonna do it.
Yeah. Again, another morbid line.
This isn't really about love.
Morbid.
All she cares about is sex.
That is one of the most morbid lines I've ever heard.
I can't go to heaven a virgin.
Like,
I'll get laughed at.
Make love to me now, or no one ever will, because I'll be dead. Because
I will be dead. So here's my question.
Well, can you do his line in the Jason Statham voice? Do you remember what it is?
Oh, I don't remember. What
that's
his line
what I'll.
Is.
Hold on. We're on hold.
All right, let's see. Let me see.
That's exactly what I'm going to do, love. All right, let's do this.
I like that you had a dog to it, too. So they bang.
Nice.
I have to ask a key question because I don't have the answer to this. Did Beverly die of A, consumption / tuberculosis, B, poison, or C, being sexed to death?
No, it was the poison.
It
was a poison.
It can't
or was
be the
it
sex
the tuberculosis?
There was like no passion in that
here's,
sex.
Here's why I know
well,
it's a poison.
Because it's a PG movie.
Earlier in the movie, he tells her to list things when her heart rate gets too high, and it'll calm her down. So she's when she says places we've been, I think she's going to start, she's giving a category and she's going to start listing things, which means her heart rate was up.
I was wondering why she said that.
I thought that was a really awkward last line. I couldn't understand what she was saying.
I rolled it back and turned on the closed captioning because I thought it would be important.
So when Russell Crowe, because he said, this will kill someone if their heart rate gets too high or if their heart starts beating fast. So I think that's what it was. Her heart got high because of the sexing.
So she didn't die, she, even though she was.
So I guess technically, she did die of the sexing then.
So well, he did sex her to death.
Because her heart rate was elevated.
She died of consumption of something.
Yeah, it was self-defense.
And now Colin Farrell can say, I will rock your world, baby.
Do you think part of. I mean, assuming he didn't know that she was poisoned. So from Colin Farrell's perspective,
Colin Farrell might have thought she died of tuberculosis.
I think he thought she died of sex.
Which is interesting
because if that, like, let's say hypothetically, I killed someone with sex. Here's my thought process. At first, I would feel guilty. I'd feel terrible that someone died. I'd go to the funeral. But after like a week,
I don't think I would go to the funeral.
The thought would creep in my mind, like, wow. Sex killed someone.
Yeah, pretty powerful.
That's not bad. Yeah, I might have something here.
You can become a superhero, and you can only sleep with bad women.
He did.
Like evil
women. He did say a couple times, "This is not right." So
he's like, "This isn't supposed to be.
This isn't right. This isn't right.
This has never happened before."
so he takes her downstairs to the princess bed, and
or it's the other way around. Not again.
It was self-defense.
Why does this always happen to me?
That's what we're calling him, Peter Consumption Lake, from now on.
So he takes her down to the princess bed and kisses her, and it doesn't work. That's not the miracle that he was supposed to perform.
Or imagine he like kisses her and it doesn't work, so then he just starts banging her again. See if this works.
I'll try it.
Little girl
they used to call it the stuff. They used to call it the stuff of life.
Princess bed.
No.
Then there's the funeral, which the father is absent from. William Hurt?
I thought he showed a cutaway shot of him.
He died from a hug. Colin Farrell hugged him.
Colin Farrell's penis was so close that he killed William Hurt, too.
Yeah, do you not receive much of the hugs? Oh, God.
Well, and Colin Farrell kind of pulls the over the top and, like, attends the funeral, but not really.
But from a bar. Right. Yeah. Do you think he did that because he was so sad or because he knew the family, like, hated him?
Because, to their perspective, he killed her with sex.
Well, do you think they knew?
Especially after the father said, don't.
Don't sleep with my.
Daughter.
So now he's like,
Did he say, don't bang my daughter?
He said, my sister sleeps on the roof, you don't, or something like that. Yeah. So he's saying, like, don't sleep with my daughter.
Do you think.
And then he did, and she dies.
Do you think they knew that's how she died?
I mean, couldn't Colin put her back in the bed?
She had consumption. What are you going to do?
He dressed her and put her back in the bed. He did have no shirt on when he brought him down. They might have been like, wait a minute. You have no shirt on.
Yeah, he really should have covered
but he
his...
Just, like, he could have just like gone back up, quickly dressed her, like
yeah, he
should have
covered his tracks and put her in her bed.
This is sounding like a good Dateline episode.
He should have gotten up the next morning. Someone should check on Beverly. I haven't seen her all day.
Yeah, where's Beverly, guys?
I love pancakes. Oh, where's Beverly?
My God, I'm so hot with all the clothes I have on right now. Where I haven't been naked in so long.
Where were you guys last night? I can account for every minute.
The guy out there was lighting the lamps. I made sure I made a loud ruckus so he knew that he saw me. Hey, what are you doing down there? Just lighting the lamps. You got to bed in the middle of the night. Okay, remember, I was here at this time.
Oh, I can't believe she's dead. You know what I was not doing? Sexing her to death.
God, I'm so horny, you know?
It's been ages.
Got to empty the old valves, you know what I mean? See you guys. Yeah. I'm just going to take my horse galloping across the lake. I'll see you guys next year. Yeah. Happy New Year.
So then it just jumps ahead. Well, no, I'm sorry, it doesn't. I'm sorry.
Because Russell Crowe
now knows that he's back in town, that Colin Farrell's back in town.
Yep. And he captures
him.
Because
he saw him at the funeral.
Spotted in Queens.
Yeah. So they capture him and the horse, and Colin Farrell's like, horse, get out of here.
He's like, get out of here, I don't get why,
because the horse could have helped him escape.
I don't think he wanted to escape at that point. I think he's just like so devastated.
He wanted the horse to get away, and he was willing to sacrifice his life to save the horse's life. And in typical goon fashion, they all attack him one at a time.
Yes.
40 guys come at you one at a time, of course.
Yeah.
So the Harse escapes.
The Harse flies
away. They're on the Brooklyn Bridge. The Harse flies away.
And Russell Crowe starts just headbutting Colin Farrell.
Yeah, this is my favorite scene in the movie.
That's by a thousand headbutts.
He headbutts him to death. Because
he headbutts him in different ways. Like, one's like right to left, the other's left to right, one's up and down, the other's down and up.
And then he's like, got him. All right.
I seen him like training in like a gym, like it's like a heavy bag.
And a heavy bag, yeah. And then like a speed bag.
That would be great. Exit Colin Farrell.
Like you have Apollo Creed there in the background.
Yeah.
Just kind of like.
With a training montage of Russell Crowe working his head.
Yeah. Colin Farrell should have antagonized him and like, this isn't even the weirdest way I've seen someone die this week.
Exactly. Yeah. Because after someone's been sexed to death, the next way we should show is they get headbutted
to death. Yep. So
falls? He wasn't dead from the headbutts, though, right?
The fall probably would have killed him.
You don't die from the headbutts. You die from the fall. Yeah, I don't know.
I think Russell Crowe thought he killed him with that headbutt. Again,
I think he did.
Well, he kind of was like, yeah.
That's what I meant. He was like, yeah. he was done.
Mission accomplished.
Russell Crowe's awfully confident in his headbutt.
There was no fist bump, though, so I don't know if we can confirm that he thought the mission was accomplished.
True.
That's true. But
there was no celebratory.
And the headbutting is one of those things, like, you know, I'm sure we've all, maybe not necessarily delivered a headbutt, but we've all knocked heads with someone. No one wins in a headbutt.
No.
True, it sucks for him, too.
Like, it's the most...
Yeah. He is a demon.
I mean, basically the most painful way for yourself to kill somebody.
Yeah.
Although Russell Crowe, Cody's as pointed out, Russell Crowe does have demon head.
That is
so
true.
You know.
And again...
But he doesn't even go into demon mode to kill him.
And it's another... True. It's like the fourth time in this movie that he has... the opportunity to make sure somebody's dead, and he does not take that opportunity.
Does not.
He's like, just like, I threw him. He's probably dead.
Yeah.
Well, at this We're point, good. Looking, and even if you think about the rest of the movie, there was really no point in Russell Crowe being a demon. Because the only time it ever comes into play is that he can't follow him north to that
girl's
home. Well,
and the fact that he is still alive 100 years later, I guess.
Well, yeah, but... Yeah, true.
But Colin Farrell's not a demon.
He's still alive.
In the book, I think there's a better reason for this.
This is the problem with the movie, is the magical realism has no rules.
Okay,
no
so
rules. There are no rules.
It's not clear.
Let's set up the second half of this movie. So he comes crawling out of the Hudson or whatever.
Well, we should say,
This is a point of debate.
So yes, we should just say that Colin Farrell fell into the Hudson River. I'm presuming it's Hudson River.
Yeah, I think
River.
It's
the Hudson River.
Okay, he falls into the Hudson River. Colin Farrell now comes out of the water. I didn't catch this, but was it one of you guys was saying that there's actually like modern cars and graffiti as he's coming out of the water, right?
I saw a modern billboard when he came up, and perhaps a little spray paint on the bridge.
Okay.
I don't think he was on it, because then it goes to the shot of the cemetery.
Yep.
And that's when it goes ahead in time. That's when you see like the buildings popping up in the background, like time
see,
is passing.
I thought Colin Farrell was coming out shortly after Russell Crowe headbutted him in.
That's what I think.
It could also be a time transition. He goes under, and then for him, he comes up, and now it's 100 years later.
But he goes back to the cemetery, and it's still 1916, though.
Exactly.
So I don't think it was.
And now we're expecting.
How do you know it's 1916 in the cemetery, though?
Because it's still the background, and then the buildings start coming up.
But I thought when he went into the cemetery, and that custodian guy who was also the horse stabler guy. He was like, are you looking for someone? And Colin Farrell, I thought, looked confused, as if like there were a lot more tombstones there now and he didn't really know the place anymore when he was just there for the funeral.
I think it was more that he was
he had no memory
at that point
from the headbutt.
I thought the headbutting was wiped his memory
free.
I read the synopsis of the book last night, and in the book him and the Harse go into some cloud of time or something, and they're lost in there for decades, and then he comes out into modern time. So
the way I saw the movie
was he comes out in 1916 or whatever, and then he's just like alive for 100 years, and is like
drawing chalk drawings in Central Park for 100 years. He's got to have a job. His clothes haven't rotted off. He's got the same outfit.
His hair did grow a little.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but why then in a scene later when he's talking to Jennifer Connelly's character who gets introduced soon, he's like, I've been having trouble recently with my memory.
Yeah, he doesn't know.
He's been having memory problems for 100 years?
Right, yeah, that's what I thought.
He didn't remember. Because remember, he writes his full name with a question mark, and then he's like, I got it. I'm...
What has he been doing for 100 years? Like, it takes him 100 years, and then he's like, oh, I might want to start figuring out who I am.
So but you know what this is, and I have the note in here that's reminding me of I, Frankenstein. Frankenstein's monster walking around the woods for 100 years, and then because he seems very comfortable in modern society.
Like, does he have a job?
We never get a scene of him being like, whoa, what is that car doing?
Right. Or no, like, I think it was because the whole thing was
like neon lights and
that his miracle was that he loved this girl so completely that he couldn't die.
Yeah.
Which is saying that's why he lived 100 years.
I think
it's not that he, like,
as crazy as it is, I think he spent 100 years doing chalk drawings, not knowing what was going on.
I really think that's what happened.
Yeah.
And then after 100 years, he just decides, oh, I'm going to go to the library and try to figure out who I am.
Well, not even that. He has to be enticed by the little girl who hugged him the same way a girl did 100 years ago. So, of course, this means that
no little girl. I mean,
Wait.
I guess in theory, no little girl could go hug him for 100 years. I guess that's.
Well, this is how the movie portrays it, and this is insane. But this is how I took it. So he's walking through Central Park. Colin Farrell is walking through Central Park. The guy who formerly took care of the hearse and then was also at the cemetery.
Yep.
Flips a coin in the air.
It says, here's your change.
Some kind of light hits the coin, and then the little girl comes up and hugs. Because
he's looking up, and they run into each other.
Yeah, and hugs Colin Farrell.
And she hugs him to say sorry for bumping into him.
Yeah, so the hearse / cemetery guy did something that somehow initiated this moment that is going to jog Colin Farrell's memory.
Yep.
I think that's what they were doing. I saw this movie thinking after that scene that it was already 2014 when he came out of the river, which made it make sense that
he's still
then
lost.
Right when he got out started trying to piece together
find out who he was.
It makes no sense. Yeah. Why would 100 years is a freaking long time.
Yeah.
Like, why would you go 100 years not like after like maybe a day, I think if that happened to me, I would be like, boy, I kind of want to start putting the pieces together.
Yeah.
Like,
who am I?
What is my name? Like, I wouldn't be wandering
like no one asked him his name for 100 years.
The horse stable / cemetery guy, like, he only got involved
for
after 100 years. Like,
and why did Russell Crowe not know he was alive
to be
for 100
that,
years?
It had to be then, because it was this
because he thought he was dead, so he didn't bother to search for him. See, it makes no sense. He should have come out of the water. He should have come out of the water in 2014.
Okay. Well,
right. That made sense.
Yeah, and we should say the little girl's mom is Jennifer Connelly.
Another unexpected what?
Yeah.
Kind of actor moment. There's a dozen of them in this movie.
So this jogs something in his head-butted brain that helps him start.
Yeah, he starts wanting to research it. And he
the 100-year
he
headbutt.
Finds which. So he goes.
I like that title better.
He goes to the library to research because he's got this the piece of chocolate with the Coheres or whatever.
Yeah.
So he goes to the library to research this, and he finds pictures of him and Beverly. From 100 years ago.
I love how he finds pictures of them when he was there for like 24 hours.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, what are the odds?
There's like historical
images
of them.
It's like a continuity photograph from the set that just kind of threw it on there.
And Jennifer Connelly sees this too, and she's not freaked out at all. Like, she's just like, hey, that's you.
For a moment, she's kind of like,
You look exactly like this guy in this picture from 1914.
And then she's like, she goes, your father? And I was like, his father would have to be super old. He would have to be super old if it was his father in the picture from 1916.
Yeah. Yeah. So, his father would have had him when he
was
like
even
90.
Then.
Yeah.
But don't worry. That's not even the craziest age issue we're going to face.
No, it's not. Because next, Jennifer Connelly says, well, I recognize this girl. Let's go to the New York Post and I'll introduce you.
Yes, I know this girl.
Well, because he says, he says, oh, they're all dead. They've all been dead for 100 years. And he goes, not all of them. I was like, no, that's not even possible.
Yeah, because Jennifer Connelly is a report. Well, is she a reporter?
She's a food columnist.
At the New York Post. So she brings Colin Farrell to the New York
Post.
Who
researches food at the library.
Why would she be at the library? Like, why would that make? Well,
she said she was there for work.
Say I work. Oh, she said I was there for.
She said I work here. Can you give him a break? Because they wouldn't let Colin Farrell look at the microfiche because exactly.
I was confused by that.
Yeah.
No, but I think it wasn't just like an archive.
He says journalists can come and go as they please. If you're with her, then you can go.
This would have been a lot better if that library guy had been like, "Are you a journalist?" Food blogger.
What do you mean microfilm for? Yeah.
Here's another thing. I thought that the next step of this movie was that Jennifer Connelly was the resurrected soul, the reincarnated soul of his previous girlfriend.
I thought so, too. That's where I thought it was going. But it did not.
I thought Jennifer Connelly was relevant to this movie.
Yeah.
But she's not.
She is not.
No, she's not.
So she brings Colin Farrell to meet her publisher, who is Willa.
Little Willa.
Let's be generous here. How old do you think Willa was in 1914?
She'd have been like five.
Seven?
I would say like six.
Five to eight age range. Okay.
Let's say five just to...
To give them the benefit of the doubt.
Really generous. So she is now 105 years old.
Working at the newspaper.
Working as editor-in-chief.
Looking
and
pretty
still
good.
Still kicking. Still drinking milkshakes.
Looking pretty good for 105.
Yeah. At a daily job...
Still killing it. There's no way.
Played by Eva Marie Saint, by the way.
As Jack pointed out when we were walking in, he's like, this movie could have solved that problem by just setting this in the 1980s.
Well, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. The book was set, or it came out in the 1980s, so it made sense at that point because it had been like 80-something years.
Right.
Setting it in 2014 or just having the 1916 stuff take place in 1930-something or whatever.
Yes.
During the Depression.
When I first saw that,
I thought, like, oh, I guess this is taking place in the 80s. And I was like, no, they clearly said New York City 2014. Yeah.
Well, you know that line where Colin Farrell tells Jennifer Connelly, let the horse do its math?
The horse
was obviously doing the math for the whole movie.
Just calculating. It's
like, that's what you get with horse math. Horse math.
Horse math, never reliable. Always a couple years off.
If one horse rides on a frozen river to upstate New York at 50 miles an hour with two people on its back, but simultaneously Russell Crowe is driving a Model T the same direction, who do you think is going to get there first? It's like, no.
Well, now, so then, like, Colin Farrell goes and, like, has, like, a nice chat with, like, Willa at her home now, but she's still living independently, by the way. Like,
oh, yeah.
105 years old, living independently.
Still kicking.
Yeah. She's got walking up steps, she's driving herself.
Well, and she's got her life alert bracelet.
Yeah, she doesn't seem freaked out at all either by...
The fact that he's still alive.
Yeah, she's like, oh, Peter Lake, hey, what's up? I haven't seen you in a while.
Who the hell is this? And Jennifer Connelly's like, you don't recognize him? No, who is this? He says his name is Peter Lake, and he knew he was a kid. That's a cruel joke, sir.
After 100 years, you'd be like...
Yeah, this movie really downplays remember the guy how met long one day. 100 years is.
Yeah. She met him one day, spent one day with him.
Yeah.
And 100 years later, it's like, oh, that guy.
Oh, hey, look, it's the guy who sexed my sister to death. We've been looking for him.
You son of a bitch.
You jerk. She had butts and pushes him out the window.
Like, and she, like, spreads her arms open and takes a gun out and shoots him out the glass
Throws
window.
Throws him in handcuffs. Yeah.
She starts headbutting him out the window. I learned this one from a man I used to know.
So then there's just this quick conversation with her and, like, Colin Farrell at her house. And then... as all conversations do in this movie, ends incredibly morbidly with her being like, well, have a feeling I won't be seeing you again.
Yeah, and he's like,
and he's
probably
like,
not.
Prob's not, old lady. And I'm the note here, I'm like, why is she even in this? Like, and this is where I'm sure the movie is being true to the book, but I'm like, why is this even in the movie?
Yeah, and why aren't they going to see each other? Because someone's going to die?
Yeah, I want to be like, this lady's 105 and still holding down a job as an editor of a major publication. Yeah. What signs are there
she should
that
be
she's
in a medical
die
journal.
No, it's probably because the last time she saw him, they didn't see each other for 100 years, so she's like, oh, if the...
So she's basically saying, you're so flaky that I'm not going to rely on seeing you again.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll still be alive in 100 years. See you in another hundo.
And this is proved because in the immediate next scene, Jennifer Connelly totally asks him out on a date, and he says, no.
I got shit to do.
She gives him this great direction, it's not much,
but if you want to come over, no thanks.
He's like, I got errands to run.
I live on
12th Ave.
Yeah, I live on 12th Ave.
Oh, and then he finds it.
Yeah.
All right,
all
question.
All she said is, I lived on 12th Ave. No number, though. Right. He finds that place pretty soon, though.
Right.
So, is this the part where one of Russell Crowe's cronies... spots him
literally like turns into the camera with a cell phone. Yes. I got him on Fifth Street.
Yet another thing that makes me very angry, knowing now that we're under the assumption that he's been around for 100 years. how have his henchmen not noticed him walking the streets for the past 100 years?
I know.
Drawing the same ridiculous finger paint of
It's not like he's, like, hiding out. They portray him as just, like, walking around openly in the park.
As a street artist, you know, yeah. Yeah, I know. This is a... Yeah. So now Russell Crowe goes back to Will Smith, and he's furious that the guy he headbutted a bunch of times didn't die, and wants...
Can we talk about his little, like, gem collection that he uses to, like, sprinkle around that tells him things?
Yeah, I didn't understand
How funny
that.
Was that? Yeah, he has, like, little, like, gemstones that you would think would be in, like, a teenage girl's... And he's, like, freaking out and, like, pushing them around with his hands.
They're oh, like, God. That's his demon power. He bedazzles.
That guy I headbutted 100 years ago.
He treats those gems.
According to these stones.
Like, that's how I treat my cell phone when I have poor reception. He's like, oh, I'll move these gems around. I got to get 4G. You know?
And they portray, like, well, also, what is his job? Because they show him in this, like, high-rise office like he's some, like, CEO of some major company.
Just Devil Incorporated? I don't know.
But the office, like, is the same, though. The room of his office is identical, same set.
Is it?
Yeah, can you imagine the people that live in the city, what they must think? Like, you got Russell Crowe on one hand, who, like, appearance hasn't changed in 100 years, that you would have to think people would notice, like, wow, like, Percy's looking pretty good.
Yeah,
that guy. I mean, he hasn't aged since 1915.
That guy who leases the 14th floor is, yeah, not aged at all.
Yeah.
I don't...
And then, like, you have, like, the editor of, like, the most famous newspaper in New York City still working at 105.
I know.
That, like, this is a crazy town.
This is a very magical reality. Yeah. And so he has to go, Russell Crowe has to go to Will Smith and apply in order to go,
He knows what's going to happen. He knows that Colin Farrell is somehow going to take Jennifer Connelly and her sick daughter to the same mansion where he took Beverly 100 years before, and he can't follow him with that restriction.
Even though Colin Farrell doesn't know this, right?
Exactly.
Oh, I think he just wants to, no matter where he goes, I want to be able to follow him, probably.
Okay, and he wants to be able to fight him to the death.
Well, I think in order to cross the border, he has to be mortal.
He has
I
to
think
be,
is the deal.
Okay. So there's a lot of bureaucracy.
Which is weird that he turns into a snowman later on.
Like, I feel like, can you imagine what filling out, like, the forms for health insurance must be if you work for, like, the devil? If this is what you have to do to travel upstate, like, your 401k plan must be, like, ridiculously involved.
Yeah, thank God, like, there aren't these restrictions for people in New York, like, just going from New York City.
I know.
Upstate.
Yeah.
That would be...
So Colin Farrell shows up at Jennifer Connelly's apartment and is like, hey, I'll have that chicken now.
Oh, wait, we should say, too, and Russell Crowe makes this big declaration where he's like, I, Percy Soames, demon and willing servant of Lucifer, hereby request that the loser of this fight die.
And he's like, all right.
Great.
Granted. Approved. Cha-chunk.
Undenied.
Yeah. So, yeah, so then...
And then he's like, before he leaves, he's like, look out for the lens flare to Will Smith.
He does say something like that.
Yeah, watch out for the moonlight or the starlight or something.
Says something like that. Yeah.
Wear your sunglasses.
Yeah. Watch out for snakes.
Take your consumption medicine. Don't have sex with anyone you don't want to die.
Don't get real monologue-y.
Yeah. So Colin Farrell is at Jennifer Connelly's house, her apartment, and they're, like, talking, and her daughter starts, like, having a seizure. And he
turns out to be cancer. Though.
Turns out she has cancer, and he sees that she has red hair, and he's like, "Oh, I have to
save
her."
Conveniently, she falls asleep
with her hand on the
With her red hair to facing him, and her hand on the window with the moon.
Yes,
there,
just like the blood
drawing. Chalk drawings he's been making for 100 years.
And suddenly, an hour and 50 minutes into the movie, Colin Farrell's like, "Get the horse! I know what I'm doing." Finally, I got it.
So he realizes he has to take her to the Coheries to kiss
go
her.
Go ahead. I don't know.
To have sex with her on the
I was
going
to say to make love to
really
her.
I don't really know. Yeah.
To kiss her on the bed.
He's like to Jennifer Connelly, look, I know this is going to look really bad.
Yes. Fortunately, 100 years later, the bed is still intact and laying there.
I tried this 100 years ago. It didn't go well.
I worked out the kinks since then.
But I really think this is the time. Okay.
Jennifer Connelly's like, let's do it.
Yeah. And if it doesn't go well,
I don't know
this
who you
time,
are, but you know what? You accepted my chicken invitation, and we're going to do this.
So they fly and away. If and your then daughter dies, it's going to be third strike I'm out. This would be strike two.
So they fly away in the magic cars, and they get to Coheres.
By the way, Jennifer Connelly totally unfazed by a magic flying horse on her roof.
She's
no
just
reaction.
Holding on.
Yeah.
And frankly, like at this point, why doesn't Colin Farrell name his horse? Like, calling it horse the whole time is kind of rude when you're relying on it for so many things. Like, if I had a partner in crime / leader in life, I wouldn't just call it person or human. I wouldn't be like, hey, human.
Hey, you.
I'm going
to. Even hey, you is less formal than hey,
horse.
I'm going to walk in tomorrow to work door and just be like, hello, reporter.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, you know,
I'm going to start calling people humans.
Yeah.
Hey, human.
Yeah.
Why, hello, human.
Yeah.
Human, will you save me quickly? Thanks. Yeah.
So strange.
They fly to the Coheres, and Russell Crowe and his Russell cronies show up.
Yeah. So Crowe and the cronies, this sounds like a great band.
It does sound like a band. He actually does have a band. He should rename it.
Because
now it's like 30-odd foots of grunts or something.
Let's tweet at him to rename his band.
Really Crowe
and the cronies.
Yeah. It's actually like, it's genius.
The Russell and cronies.
He shows up with like 30 or 20,
for some
20
reason,
cronies.
Yeah.
And the horse flies in the air and like slams into the ice because they're all staying on the ice. And so like all his cronies are
underwater.
So it's just
not
two
only
of them.
His cronies, but also like three BMWs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And as in The Lone Ranger, the horse is the hero of this movie.
Yeah,
Colin
absolutely.
Farrell was not the hero
of
this movie.
Oh, yeah, Colin Farrell was just
kind of
standing
hero.
There.
Yeah.
So then they decide to duke it out mano a mano as Jennifer Connelly watches on. And so they just start
completely cool with what's going on with her sick child in the snow.
She takes a seat in the snow.
She doesn't realize that. Wow, I just flew on a horse with a strange man who's now fist-fighting Russell Crowe.
And a horse just made a hole in the ice. She should be questioning a lot of her choices at that point.
So they're fighting, and Russell Crowe gets distracted by starlight in his eye. And Colin Farrell takes
it. Was that what happened?
I think so.
Okay.
Colin Farrell takes the opportunity to stab him in the throat.
That Lucifer warned him about.
And he stabs him in the throat, much like Russell Crowe killed the Joaquin Phoenix character at the end of Gladiator.
Oh, yeah.
Stuck him with the knife, and then they just kind of looked at each other, and then he pulls it out, and he just kind of falls. It was exactly the same. It was choreographed the same way.
Yeah.
So he turns into a snowman.
Yeah,
because
that's how demons die.
Yeah, he just turns into a snowman. Yep.
So Colin Farrell then
and
takes.
And they allude to that too.
He stabbed him with the name plaque from the ship. The little baby boat he was found on.
Yeah.
Because Russell Crowe says when he's talking to Lucifer, he's like, "I want to kill him and turn him into snow."
Oh, he does say that.
Yeah, he does say that.
That's right.
Oh, I guess that's.
Is this the way people die?
Who's
now?
The snow now, dog?
So. They go inside inside the house to the princess bed, and he lays the girl down and kisses her.
On the forehead.
On the forehead.
That's important.
Harris and I have an experimental treatment.
And it doesn't look like it worked, but then it did.
And she wakes up, but she only woke up out of her seizure, so we really don't know whether or not he actually cured her at all.
She had
a sickness seizure.
Not that the princess bed works, though. Not that the princess bed works. Colin Farrell's like, my work here is done.
Yeah, he does.
Yep. He's like, oh, 100 years of work.
My work here is done. He visits Beverly's grave, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he does. He drops Jennifer Connelly off and then flies to Beverly's grave and then flies away.
And then
he becomes
flies
a star?
Away.
Yep.
He becomes a star in the Belt of Orion.
By the way, flies away to a song just different enough from the song at the end of The Return of the King that they can't be sued. Just different enough. Like, it is Enya's, like, Into the West, but, like, someone was like, change every third note so that Enya can't sue us. So here's, okay, I have a couple questions about this movie's magical realism. The first one I just want to ask is, why did the Harse lead Colin Farrell to Beverly's house to break into Beverly's house?
I think it's because eventually he was going to have to kiss the other little girl on the princess bed. So the only way he could discover the princess bed is by meeting Beverly and then going to her house and then
Beverly.
Oh, good Lord, you might be right.
Maybe the horse.
That's the only thing that makes any sense.
Maybe the horse is just a really good matchmaker.
That's true.
That could be true.
Well, I thought it was more for Beverly's sake, because she still had her miracle to give.
Right,
because
remember, so, Lucifer...
I thought it was
going to be... Will Smith,
said,
to
Will Smith said that Colin Farrell was Beverly's miracle.
Right.
I thought it was kind of like a miracle pay it forward. Okay. Like,
yeah,
that miracle had to happen for then Colin Farrell to deliver his miracle.
Yeah, so Colin Farrell was Beverly's
and
miracle,
the is there to facilitate
and that little
this.
Cancer redheaded kid
the,
is... Colin Farrell's miracle.
I see.
And then maybe the cancer kid is going to pay that miracle for
you.
Oh,
I better.
And Winter's Tale, too.
Yeah.
A Spring's Tale.
Yes. A Spring's Tale.
Summer Song. Autumn's Anthology.
Yeah. Wow. All right, we have two So Wrong It's Right questions. The first one's just an easy one. Or take your best guess at what this movie's budget was.
Oh, I know this one.
And how much it made...
I know this one.
Domestic and international combined.
I have to stop reading the trivia.
I do not know. I'm going to say the film was probably made for... I'm going to say it was made for 100 mil, and it made 60 mil. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Well, it's how much it made
domestically? Domestic and international
combined.
Combined, yeah.
All right, I'm going to say the budget was... 50 million.
Okay.
And it made $35 million.
Okay. Dora, what do you think?
I'm going to say the budget was $147
million. Whoa.
Wow.
Okay.
Very expensive.
And that it made $72
million. Okay. I think Brian would be the closest.
Yeah, I would say so.
The budget of the movie is in debate, because right as this movie was coming out... they started telling people it was originally budgeted as a $75 million movie. As they were realizing it was about to tank, they started telling people that the budget had been cut to $60 million. So the budget is somewhere between 60 and 75. It made $12 million in the U.S., made $18 million internationally for a whopping total of $30
million.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a huge bomb.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why.
I don't remember any marketing for this, though, either. Like, I
never heard of
this.
I didn't hear of it.
The trailers were annoying.
Really?
They were super annoying. Yeah.
So they just... And they made it like a romantic, like, Valentine's Day movie.
Yes. There was a lot of shots...
Instead of a confusing, depressing pile of crap?
It just was a lot of shots of snow, and they played the heck out of the shot of Colin Farrell and the girl riding the horse through Central Park.
Okay.
Like, you got a lot of that stuff.
And a lot of them, like, smiling at each other. I mean, I will say that... I felt like the chemistry between Colin Farrell and the Beverly character was not bad.
No, I would say that the love story stuff I didn't mind. Like, I kind of liked it. It was kind of sweet. And the Colin Farrell I like in this movie. I like Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
Well, and the acting was not bad. It's not wrong for its acting,
Russell Crowe was terrible.
Well, the accent wasn't good,
he
was doing pretty good,
I
thought.
Russell Crowe was pretty bad.
I'm turning you to snow.
Yeah. I didn't like her, though.
Yeah,
I thought
like
Beverly
her.
Was really good.
Well,
yeah, no,
she's just likable. She's the Downton Abbey girl.
Oh, I don't watch that. Okay, she's on... Okay.
Oh, I don't watch that.
Well, I was wondering. I was like, she's got to be famous, because I'm like, she's the lead.
Yeah.
I've never seen her before, and I'm like, she's the lead in a...
I've only seen the first season.
Other actors, so you know.
I've only seen the first season, but I read that she's in Downton Abbey.
Okay.
So...
That makes more sense to me, then.
My main problem with... And I don't know how... different it is in the book. I imagine the overall plot isn't that much different than the movie, but my main problem with it was, you know, this is billed as like a love story and it comes out on Valentine's Day, which I know is movie and not the book, release day wise, but like you said, I kind of like the love story aspect of the first part, and they kind of made you believe as the movie went along that like, yeah, this girl that died that he loved was going to somehow be brought back,
yeah,
and the whole thing was like, can you love someone so much they never truly die and everything?
Nope.
That really wasn't the case at all.
Yeah.
The answer is no, you
cannot. It really was
actually,
like,
you can love someone so much that they do die in the case
really
of
sucks.
Being sexed to death.
Yeah,
right.
Can you sex someone
exactly.
so much
you,
they die?
Yeah. You make love to someone
that
so
I know you
much
can't
that they die.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, son.
Yeah.
But I just felt like it was a really underwhelming ending because... And this part, I'm guessing the book did better with developing Jennifer Connelly and the daughter's characters.
I felt no connection.
Yeah, you
have
no connection. So really,
yeah.
that's
or even
kind of just
daughter.
A person.
Even
yeah.
the
yeah.
little cancer you, girl, I was like, you're cute and all, but where'd you come from?
Right, and then you realize the whole movie really just comes down to the fact that Colin Farrell was wandering the streets apparently for 100 years trying to find his purpose.
Yeah.
And if not at the bottom
the
of the ocean.
The purpose ends up being this girl who's in the movie for the last, like, 15 minutes. It's if your ending of your movie is going to hinge on that character, you have to do a better job of developing it and make the audience care about it.
Agreed.
I thought they also really dropped the ball on the scene where she hugs Colin Farrell, like, the coin flip. Yeah, and, like, because it didn't come together for what was happening, like, that this incident was jogging his memory or something, or that that other angel played some role in
At no point do we see the angels like in their dugout talking about their plans. We only see the demons doing
that. Well, that's where I say, like, the magical reality problem of this is you see very much the demon magical side, but you don't even understand the angel magical side. Or, this was incredibly frustrating.
Russell Crowe needs to get away from playing characters that are obsessed with finding one man and following them to the ends of the earth to capture them.
Yeah.
It's not really the ends of the earth. You couldn't even leave the city.
Yeah, either
That's right.
He's been chosen a lot of, like, homoerotic roles in the past couple of years, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
And at least he didn't sing
Will Smith
this
should just stop altogether.
True. Yeah, and Will Smith should have been like, I can't take any risks, guys.
I'm starting to think it wasn't like a cameo. It was more of just like a bit part. It was like the only part he could get.
Well, here's our next Sarong It's Right question. This is not we're at an hour 25 minutes, multiple by the way. Choice. Oh, God. All right, we'll wrap this is our last one. We do multiple choice. This is going to be short answer. Take your best guess. How did writer-director Akiva Goldsmith get Will Smith to be in this?
Oh, no.
Consumption?
Did it have to do with his son?
No, just take your best guess. Whatever you think it might be. How did that writer, noted writer director Akiva Goldsmith, get Will Smith to be in the movie?
I can't even.
What the connection is that he? Anyone have any guesses?
Wasn't this the same writer? I know, like, he Angels wrote, and Demons.
I think he wrote I Am Legend. Wasn't he involved with I Am Legend?
Yes. That is it. Akiva Goldsmith wrote both I, Robot and I Am Legend.
Oh, okay.
And a quote from him, Akiva Goldsmith, quote, "This movie is about 20 years of favors."
That's a great favor. It's a great return on the favor.
Yep.
That's why they didn't make him change his clothes.
Yes, and I feel like that's why he wasn't built. And I bet Will Smith was like, "Just look, dude, I love you. I'll do this. Just could you not build me in this, man?
Don't tell people I'm played the devil." Yeah.
So that's why all these actors that you like are in this terrible movie.
Yeah,
that explains it. And every single one, they like turn into the camera, and you're like, "What?" But it's like unceremoniously, like they're just there in the scene.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm Will Smith. Yeah. Yep, I'm William Hurt. Yep.
Yeah. It's like the
Connelly.
Opposite of the.
Okay.
The Wes Anderson movies where everyone's down to do a small cameo just because everyone loves Wes Anderson and respects his movies so much. It's like, in this case, it's like everyone owes this guy but doesn't want to be in the movie and is embarrassed to be in the movie cameo out of, like, guilt.
Yeah, it's like that scene with the angel and the demon. This one, everyone after they did this was like, "Look, we're good now, right?" Like,
yeah, cool. Exactly.
Straight.
Probably after Will Smith filmed that first scene, he's like, "All right, I'm good, right?" Like, "No, Will, we need you for one more scene."
Okay. And he's like, "All right, well, I'm not changing my clothes."
I said you have one day with me. One day.
Yeah.
How many setups can you get in?
Do I get to say denied?
Yes. All right, that brings this one to a close. As always, Dora, so much. Dora, you always are on for, like, the zingers. As I was watching this movie, this is a little food fighty, and it's complexity.
Yeah, you guys choose some good ones for me.
Yeah.
Food fight. And what was the other one?
Getaway.
It should be called Drive because
like,
they do is sit in that damn car the whole time.
Yeah, Getaway. Yeah. And you can, as always, you can follow us on Facebook. You can get older episodes, and you can get Cody's episode descriptions at stopthemoviepodcast.podbean.com. And if you get a chance to give us a review on iTunes, that helps move us up the Apple algorithm. Especially in that new iTunes store format, which is about as crazy as this movie if you've updated your software. I think that does it. We'll be back soon with more movies. We're going to have Dora back soon again. Dora's always on some of our funniest episodes. And I think that's it. You guys good?
Let's talk for another half hour.
I know.
What's up with you, Alex?
What's going on with you? If we were in the tone of this movie, we would just drag this out.
Let's make this episode 100 years long. I voted 100 years that we redo this podcast and watch it again.
We should.
In 100, yes, when we were, because at one point, by the way,
and by this movie's logic, we'll all probably still be alive.
Yeah. We'll all have to speak in an Irish accent.
I do want
to
say, Eva Marie Saint looks fantastic for 105 years old.
Oh, yeah. Killing it. Drinking milkshakes.
With chocolate.
Drinking milkshakes and running newspapers. Yeah, she's killing it.
She's doing good.
Yeah.
All right.
Role model.
Exactly. All of her. For me, too. Yeah. All right, I think it brings us to a close. We'll see everyone back here next time. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.